Good afternoon, Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington and the future capital of the state of Liberty, Spokane Valley. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, I need to remind everybody out there that it's going to take all of us. Last year was the year we made freedom a reality. This year is the year we fight for it, and especially in Washington, D.C., with the opportunity to change things for a generation at least. But we always have to remember our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. There are a lot of Christians out there saying that we just need to obey the government no matter what. We just need to sit back and let our leaders do things for us. Just pray for them, that's all. But I want to remind you about Exodus 15:3. The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Are we warriors? And that's the question we need to answer this year. Because if we are warriors, we can't let off the gas. We need to keep pushing for freedom and liberty. We need to keep doing it not only in Washington, D.C., but in Washington State and Idaho, and also at the local level, wherever we possibly can, so we do indeed have a rebirth of freedom. And it is my pleasure. We're going to be doing this a little different, a little free flow today on Patriot Radio. It's my pleasure to introduce to you somebody that you probably know a little bit about, John Jacob Schmidt. His name is your name, too. Radio Free Readout, and also on the ACN Network on Saturdays. John, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Matt, it is an honor. Thanks for having me back. Good times.
I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be great because there's so much in the news today that's just kind of outrageous, actually, right?
Yeah.
So first I want to start with, on the international front, been talking quite a bit about Trump's direction seems to be to isolate China, draw closer to Russia. There's been this really kind of aggressive posturing by China, building islands in the South China Sea to extend their territorial waters, but also the stealing of the sub. Where do you think all this is going?
Well, that's dangerous to get into. Where is this all going? I don't know. I know that we've got a global system that considers Trump a threat. The entire global world order considers him a threat. And he is a threat, actually, to their system. I think the only ones that probably are not establishment, if you will, are the Russians. So it's kind of a natural fit for Trump to be, I mean, they're the only ones that, they don't have any friends. They're finding friendship in each other. But it's going to be really interesting to watch this unfold. I think that, and I've said this before, I would not be surprised if there are private conversations going on where they're trying to figure out a way to kill him, Trump.
It really seems like that 2017 is going to be a very bloody year internationally. And I have heard many people very afraid for Trump's life, very afraid that somebody is going to try to do something. And I think that all the posturing going on right now around the world, you know, this assassination of the Russian ambassador in Turkey, all of the things that are happening, we have to remember something. As Americans, we are the light on the hill, not Russia, not China. We are the light on the hill.
That's
and
right.
Even though we might draw close to Russia, they're still not our friend.
No, not at all.
And they never will be.
No, well, not in our lifetimes. I've done a lot of reading. Just recently, I've been reading so much about the disinformation campaigns of the Soviets and what they call desinformatia and the what they call active measures. And there's so much that's going on in our culture today that it's got the Soviet fingerprints all over it, from the Black Lives Matter to the Occupy movement, this anarchist movement, the division, the racial division. All of this is so orchestrated, laid out way ahead of time what that would look like. And now we're seeing it come to fruition. So I don't trust them. I admire Putin. I wish we had I wish we had a president like him. He's definitely not someone to be trusted.
I actually watched the New Year's speech of Putin and then watched Obama's right afterward. And amazing. I got to tell you, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed.
Yes.
It was all Obama was Putin. I respect him. I don't trust him. He's an old KGB man,
yep.
But he was for his country. He really was.
That's right.
And his people.
And he still is. He is a true patriot. And I wish we had a president that was a patriot, for at least for the last 8 years. I believe that Trump also loves his country. And I think he's going to do some good things. But it does not take any kind of a special person to look at the condition in our country and say, this is wrong, that's wrong, this needs to be fixed. We need to seal our borders. We can't keep importing, Muslims by the thousands into our country and not expect, that to disrupt our American way of life. And so he's going to do some good things. But what concerns me is that he is so constitutionally illiterate. Some of the things that he's proposing, I think I'm breaking up a little bit there. Some of the things that he's proposing is disturbing. Some of the members of his cabinet have me concerned. They're globalists. So maybe because they can't control Trump, maybe this is the way they're going to control his administration, is by working their way into those cabinet positions, those positions of influence that he will turn to for advice, for counsel. And that's that's the only way that I can see that this global power still continuing with its agenda and still dealing with him being in there.
Certainly they've lost control. I mean, they lost control with the Brexit, then with the vote in Italy, almost with the vote in Austria. Now there's some people that are saying that vote was rigged, and that's why
yes.
the right-wing, so-called right-wing candidate, freedom candidate, lost. So that brings us actually to the Middle East, because there is a lot happening in the Middle East right now. And I've been talking about it on this show, that all of the things that we're seeing happening, the entire inside of the temple, all of the accoutrements and clothing and everything has already been created. They reconstituted the Sanhedrin. They elected a high priest for the first time in centuries. And now the United Nations comes out, condemns Israel, and then also on top of that wants to turn the Temple Mount more Muslim. And to that end, a couple months ago, Jonathan Cahn and Joseph Farah were kicked off the Temple Mount for using the word temple in their briefing.
Yes.
And it just happened again to an Israeli archaeologist as well, just a couple days ago. What is your take on all that, and especially the whole thing about condemning Israel? I know there's a lot of people out there that have mixed emotions on that, but the United States, abstaining from a vote like that after orchestrating everything, that's just total underhanded deceit.
Absolutely. And this is the hypocrisy of the left. Everything that Trump wants to do, they're saying, is unprecedented. It's unprecedented that he wants to seal our borders. It's unprecedented that he wants to stop hostile Muslims from coming into our country. Those things are not unprecedented. What's unprecedented is this administration, the accusers, by the way, this administration, who is doing what is unprecedented. It is unprecedented for the United States to throw Israel under the bus, which is precisely what they're trying to do. And I have a different perspective on this. Actually, I just watched a video documentary, part one. I'm going to watch part two tonight. You brought up Joseph Farah. It's a WorldNet Daily production called Disinformation. It goes all the way to the founding of the communist doctrine from the Bolshevik Revolution, even before that, Marx, all the way through their campaign, and how much they've influenced the situation in the Middle East with Palestine, standing up the Palestinian Liberation Organization, all of the things that the KGB did, and then accused the CIA. It was a beautiful piece of work. They would go and stir the pot somewhere and then immediately announce that the CIA must have been behind it when they were the ones that were in fact behind it. So the fact that Russia now is actively, you know, involved in Syria, and now that the United States condemned Israel, now there's an argument for a one state solution. That's starting, you're starting to hear that word, a one state solution. Look, instead of having two countries, listen, instead of having Israel, instead of having a Palestine country, let's just have one country and they can live together. And if you can't deal with that, then, well, you're a hater. But we already know that the Palestinians have said they'll never accept Jews living in what they call Palestine or Israel. They're going to push them into the sea. Their own words. They're going to kill every one of them. There's no way that they can live together. And Obama knows this.
He does. There's no question about it. He does know it. And the other part of this, too, it's interesting. It's tolerance one way. You know, you have this Israeli archaeologist, Gabriel Barclay, who is renowned, actually, for finding the oldest inscription, Bible inscription, on some amulets in Jerusalem. Oldest, to, you know, dated to record 600 BC. Guy is renowned. And he's just up there talking about the temple because the fact that they found those inscriptions proves that the Jews had been there, right?
Yes.
You know, and he's talking, and immediately when he uses the word temple, Muslim authorities that are up there. And yes, that's correct, people. A lot of people don't understand that. There are Muslim police on the Temple Mount that have been given the authority on the Temple Mount, and they go to the Jewish, the Israeli police when there is an issue.
Yes.
But they still have authority up there, and they said, he's talking something he shouldn't. We need to get rid of him and get out, you know, get him out of there.
That's right. That's right. Because what he's saying establishes first rights of ownership. I mean, well, back when the when God gave the Jews Israel, and they, you know, they established the land, they want to make that go away. It's very interesting to hear the left describe the situation in the Middle East, and they don't want to start. Matter of fact, I heard a woman, so-called not a professor, but historian, a journalist that became real interested in promoting the Palestinian cause. And she was saying, you know, to understand the situation in the Middle East, I need to pull this back up. She said, you don't need to go back 2,000 or 3,000 years. You just need to go back to the 1850s. And she starts, so this is the argument of the left. They're starting the history of Israel in the 1800s. So in their mind's eye, they don't recognize history before that. And so they start to talk about, you know, the Ottoman Empire, the British, and how this morphed into, you know, the land of Palestine, and there weren't any Jews there. And so it's preposterous. It's the ultimate deception that is being put out, completely erasing and rewriting history. So what you're talking about when they start discussing historical precedents for Jews living in that land, occupying the land, owning the land, being a Jewish nation, they want to make that go away.
They do. They don't want to recognize it. And it's been this fight since the 1940s, you know, when Israel was established. It has been this fight the entire time. But there's a lot of Christians out there who say that we should abandon Israel, that we should leave Israel to its own devices. And to a certain extent, I think that leaving them to make their own decisions is a good thing. But as far as, you know, abandoning Israel, I mean, the United States was the first country to officially recognize Israel. And yeah, Harry Truman, a Democrat, actually went against the advice of renowned people like George Catlett Marshall, who was the head of all U.S. forces during World War II.
Yeah.
And we still did it. And Truman it was really kind of an interesting quote. They asked him why he did it. He says, because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. That was the end of the discussion. We're doing this because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. It was absolutely supernatural what took place there. And they've been fighting for it ever since, like we were told they would. But we're closing out. I mean, you can see the writing on the wall. We don't know what type of a time frame we're on, timeline that we're on. But boy, if you could ever say that, you know, things are looking like the end times, I don't know what else to say. That's not my area of specialty, although that I have, you know, spent quite a bit of time, you know, reading it and studying it over the years. Let me just say this. This is the most exciting time in history you could ever live or hope to live. I love living in the time that we're in. This is amazing.
Yeah, we can barely keep up. Just a week and a half ago, you know, there was a Russian ambassador. I mean, that used to be the news cycle for 6 months.
That
happened, right? Now it's like, oh, what happened 2 weeks ago? Very interesting. And the fact that the Syrian government now is reestablishing control and has essentially won the Battle of Aleppo, has kicked out ISIS and the so-called moderate, you know,
right,
anti-Syrian
moderate forces. Rebels.
Yeah, there's no such thing. We all know that, I think. We're seeing it kind of wind down in Syria. Do you think things will begin to ramp up maybe in Israel or in Turkey, which is the country I've always been watching because it's got one of the largest armies in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And it can be the most unstable.
Well,
and it's a NATO ally.
Yeah, exactly. The dynamics there are incredible. You have Islam, hard line Islamists taking control of Turkey, which is still a NATO country. They just shot down. Did they not just shoot down a Syrian jet? Oh no, a Russian jet. So here, this is really interesting. When you have Turkish forces engaging, not Soviet. Did I say Soviet? Russian. Same thing. Different decade. That's a remarkable thing to watch. Yes, absolutely. It's so volatile. It could explode in an evening. I mean, really, we could wake up to see the news of just some amazing headlines. It's really hard to pinpoint exactly who's going to do what next. But, you know, in the big scheme of things, you know, we know how it's all going to play out eventually. It's very interesting actually watching all the little micro details we weren't given in the Bible start to get filled in right before our eyes.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Which kind of brings us to this confrontation with Russia that Obama is trying to foment, kicking out 35 ambassadors. The Russians laugh it off which is kind of brilliant by Putin.
It was he won up to Obama again. Again. He just hands his behind to back to Obama over and over, and it's amusing to watch. I love watching it.
Well, and Obama's response to being one upped is now to announce that U.S. special forces are in the Baltic countries on the border with Russia,
Lithuania. We're going to defend Lithuania now. So if he had any more time left besides 2 weeks, I would think that he was trying to start a fight with Russia. And we're already in a proxy war with them in Syria.
Well, so let's talk about that. You were in the special forces. We already had special forces. At least we should have had special forces on the border with Russia in the Baltic states.
Absolutely.
So this announcement really is nothing more than had already been going on already.
It's posturing. It's the public information, which is a fancy word for propaganda.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, and now we have our own. The United States is going to be forming its counter propaganda arm. What's the name of that program?
The Ministry of Truth.
The new and revised Pravda, the American version. That's going to be. But see, it's going to be to ostensibly just to counter Russia's disinformation. Which, good luck. But I also see that morphing into countering any message that goes against the, you know, the establishment at some point, anything that they consider a threat. So Patriot Radio could find itself on that list at some point where they're running campaigns to counter the narrative, you know, being put out here. So,
so you know you're doing well if they start doing that, right?
I mean, well, yeah. If you're catching flack, you know you're over the target, right?
So yeah, my question then is, how is this going to be any different than now? I mean, we have the mainstream media who tries to counter everything we do, and we're still winning the war because it's about reason and logic and truth.
Because they're being rendered irrelevant. And also the people are realizing that the real fake news, if there is such a thing, the true fake news is the corporate media, the establishment media. And people are catching on to this.
Well, let's talk, you know, we have, and this is an example of fake news, I suppose, or not reporting. And then when you do report, you minimize what's happening.
Sure.
Venezuela, you have an oil-rich nation, should be one of the richest countries in the entire world per capita, right? They have all the resources they could possibly need. They have a second world, some might say a first world infrastructure.
Yeah.
Totally collapsing. Cannibalism in prisons to complete inflation of the currency. They get rid of the 100 Bolivar note so they can go to a 500 Bolivar note. They don't have anything to replace it with. People are up in arms over that. There's run on banks, food. Everything we've actually talked about could happen in America.
Sure.
Is happening in Venezuela.
Right.
What's your take on that? What are you taking out of it? And what should be the lesson to folks about that?
Well, on Radio Free Redoubt, we've covered this, followed it pretty much for the last year and a half as this has developed or deteriorated, I should say. Now we've got stories of people that are with 3 or 4 or 5 children that are giving their children away to families or agencies to care for their children so they won't have to send them into prostitution. That is a horrible, horrible place to be. I can't even imagine it. But the reason why we follow it is because it is an example of what can happen to a nation whose economy collapses and crumbles. And there are so many countless financial experts that are saying the United States, the economy cannot be sustained. There is a collapse coming. And so for us to even get a glimpse of what that might look like, we need to look at other countries that have gone before, you know, through that, or who are going through that economic collapse right now. So we can learn from those lessons and find out how we can maybe mitigate that for some of us who are paying attention, to become self-reliant at multiple different levels. You know, your own medical care as much as you can, your own food, being able to produce your food or store enough food to get through that season, and the means for, security. Communication, so you can stay informed. They have the corner. The government, when I say they, are controlling the flow of information. They're controlling the food. In that type of a nation, you should not be. People should not be going hungry, but they are. So, my take on that is, it's something that we should pay very close attention to, glean the lessons learned, and try to take steps so that we can ease some of the suffering in our own country. Because when the United States economy goes, it's not going to be just a isolated country situation where, like in the Venezuelans, they can run to the Colombian border and they can sell their hair or they can buy goods that they can't get in Venezuela. When the United States economy goes, everything goes. And there won't be a place to run to get stuff that you can't get in Spokane.
Well, I think it brings up a couple points, but the first is that Donald Trump's been elected. Will he be able to react quick enough to turn things around?
Well, I'm not a mathematical or a economical genius, but I've read a lot of the work from those who are, and they're saying that it's essentially mathematically impossible for them to stop this economic collapse that's coming. They can temporarily shore it up, which is what they've been doing. But the longer they do that, reportedly, it's reported that the the more devastating the consequences will be once they can't prop it up anymore, they can't hold it back anymore, they can't pretend anymore. When things come down, then I don't think any one man is going to be able to fix it. And I don't think there's a solution for any of America's problems in Washington, D.C. I think really it's at the local level is where you're going to fix this country.
I mean, I think we have to cut the size and scope of government by about half.
Of course.
And we have to, you know, develop our own natural resources and manufacturing here in America. And Donald Trump, there was a briefing article. I get a lot of these briefing articles every morning. One of them this morning, the guy talked about the fact that he had been briefed privately by members of the transition team in the new administration. And his quote was, "We're going to go into the swamp with tanks on day one." That's literally what he said. And they aren't going to know what hit them. I don't know. I mean, the drastic level of decentralization that would have to occur to turn things around, I just don't know if it's politically possible for that to happen
either. Well, and when I say, I want to clarify something. When I say there are no solutions in Washington, D.C. to fix our problems, actually, that's the opposite of that is really true. The solution is to remove the obstruction to the United States repairing itself. The centralization of government and the massive power that the machine that they've become, hungry for more power, for more money. They can never get enough. They will never get enough. And as long as that continues to grow, they will continuously obstruct any reasonable process for returning to prosperity and liberty. So the solution is in Washington, but it's not by passing more laws or raising, you know, funding more programs. It's about eliminating them. You have to go to the source of the problem, and the problem's in Washington, D.C. Now, anybody who's ever tried to get anything done has been stifled at the federal level.
Well, talking about this whole thing with debts and paying off debts, there's a lot of countries that are kind of going back to a unique way of paying debts off, and that's with tangible goods, right? Most humorous of which was Cuba offering to pay a Cold War debt to the Czechs in rum. What is your take on that? Do you think it will be, you know, somebody kind of derided it by saying that it would take the, you know, the Czechs 100 years to drink it, which sounds like a challenge probably to the Czechs.
No kidding.
But do you think we're going to see more of that, you know, trying to get out of this debt spiral that a lot of countries are in? Some countries are acknowledging it. I find it interesting that communist Cuba is acknowledging it.
Yeah.
But is it going to be something we see in the future, a trend in the future, even for maybe states doing something like that? I don't know.
Well, in the United States, that is very unique. To try to pay off some of your debt with rum is that's one of the more unique ideas that I've heard. That's thinking outside the box. But really, you know, we talk about tangibles. You're talking about natural resources, oil, gold, and natural gas, things like the natural resources. In the United States, I know in the American Redoubt, the land that's sitting over, according to the studies by the American Lands Council, there are literally trillions, plural, trillions of dollars worth of natural resources sitting under just within the boundaries of the American Redoubt. There is enough there for the states to be completely self-reliant and self-sufficient and debt-free and in the black, actually, and not needing the federal government at all. But the problem is our own federal government, in concert with the globalists, have our natural resources so tied up, our federal lands so tied up, and it's an atrocity what's happening with, especially Obama, with his final, parting shots as he's going out of, leaving the White House, it's about time, and taking land back, you know, seizing land or locking it up, so it can never be touched for any purpose. What they're doing is they're tying up our natural resources, and that has got through the environmental regulations and these monuments and everything else that they're trying to do at the federal level has basically stolen the wealth or the access to the wealth by the states, especially in the West.
Especially in the West. I mean, that's where we're seeing everything happen. And that's what people, these blue bloods on the East Coast, really believe the West was about. They believed that the West was this natural resource thing for their own manufacturing, and they had to control those natural resources. And they found out that the best way to do that was by government taking over all of it.
Right.
You know, and depriving, really, I think, the people of the wealth that is inherent to their own country and their own land, really.
It is.
You know, ultimately, I think that's what it is. Well, let's move to some stuff on the national level. A couple of very interesting things. So there's this human tracking chip bill that passed through part of Congress.
Yeah.
A lot of people said, oh, it's just, you know, and I got to tell you something. I'm tired of people saying, oh, it's never going to happen. You guys are just,
you're, right.
And every time everything we say is going to happen, happens. Every time
it does. Like, give us 7 years. The conspiracy theory today is the news headlines in 10 years.
I remember I got called into leadership office in Olympia when I put out a thing on micro drones, right? They're like, this is conspiracy. I said, no, it's not. Here's Popular Mechanics, Popular Science.
Right.
Here's my primary sources. Where are yours, you know? And, oh, well, you just need to tone it down. People aren't ready for that stuff. Well, why don't the people decide that, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, let's wait until you overreach, and then we'll be reactionaries from, you know, for forever.
Right.
Instead of being proactive.
So this human tracking bill, always in the guise of safety.
Oh, yes.
We have got to put a tracking chip in you. Alzheimer's patients.
Oh, what if your grandma was... What if your grandma got lost and she had Alzheimer's? Wouldn't she want her returned?
Yeah. And some people said, Matt, that's absolutely not true. That is not in that bill. And I said, yes, it is. Where it says best practices in the bill, it says best practices to be adopted.
Right.
Those best practices by a third-party entity, again, not controlled by the people, unelected bureaucrats, lays out that best practices is a chip.
Yep.
So Alzheimer's patients... Who's next? We already have it in our dogs. Our dogs are good. Cats are good.
Gun owners.
Okay, we're going to chip gun owners.
Absolutely.
Shoot, we shouldn't even have said that on the radio.
Don't we just give them ideas? Not like they didn't already think of it somewhere.
Right. Oh. So, where is it going to head? And that brings us kind of to the next thing, which is a technological leap forward. And this is happening so regularly now, but we got briefed here about a month ago on... The automated air traffic control system for drones. So now this is going to be an automated air traffic control system, no human beings, and it's going to control drone flights. And they literally have, this isn't in the theoretical realm. They are field testing this. It's not beta. They are field testing this stuff right now. So literally you're going to have drones delivering stuff to your house, and you will have a drone that can go pick stuff up for you at wherever, like a prescription at the pharmacy or whatever. This technology, people said, well, what do you think is going to happen? Well, we also got briefed, the same briefing, we got briefed on the automated cars.
Yeah.
2 years, they will be on the streets as normal. And then the Israelis, I just got this yesterday, the Israelis in November tested an automated, wait for it, flying car, wait for it, drone.
Wow. Welcome
for passengers.
Welcome to the Jetsons.
Right. I mean, how do we stay ahead of this? I mean, because all the constitutional issues that are implicated in some of this and some of the more interesting things, like the fact that police not being able to get revenue from tickets anymore, that's kind of a humorous side effect to all of this.
Yeah. This is, although they'll find ways to make revenue. Absolutely.
Exactly.
I mean, if it floats, flies, or if it's unmanned, it's going to have to go through some type of inspection that's going to cost thousands. You know, they'll treat it like aircraft. So, yeah, it is an amazing time to live. Who knows where, you know, this will all go and take us. Who knows how much time we have left before the Lord, you know, let's just continue on. But bizarre. I just heard about that actually from you about the flying, testing the flying car in Israel.
It's crazy.
So Google lost out, huh? They didn't, they weren't the first ones to the moon on this one, huh?
No. Well, they've had, I mean, they've had flying cars, you know, the Mueller flying car has been around since the 1970s.
Sure.
But they can never figure out, do we treat it like an aircraft? Do we treat it like a car? Well, I mean, now you have the next logical step, which is take that out of the equation, have a drone, right?
Absolutely.
And it'll improve the efficiency of traffic flow and all of these other sorts of things. Well, yeah. Roads and
all northbound traffic is 20 feet above the deck, and all southbound traffic is 2 feet off the deck.
Right.
It'll be great.
It is amazing. But speaking of technology, let's talk about this horrible thing that happened on Facebook. You had some comments on this as we were talking before the show.
Oh,
where this developmentally disabled individual is literally tortured live on Facebook.
You know, talking about the technology and where all this is going to go. I said, you know, a couple of years ago when we started seeing, there was something that happened. I can't recall the story, but something that was live streamed, and my heart just sank because our sick culture, I mean, spiritually ill, the stuff that we're going to see as a nation live streaming in the future is going to be so grotesque. And this is one example. These four blacks in Chicago found a white guy, lured him in.
He's mentally,
developmentally disabled. There we go. They tortured him for like up to 48 hours, making him drink out of the toilets, making him scream F Trump, F whites. And the White House is trying to, they're saying that they're not, it's inconclusive whether or not it was a hate crime.
Yeah.
So, gosh, I wish they would get it. The moving van that moved that I saw on the news pulled up there yesterday at the White House. I wanted to jump on a plane and get there and help them pack.
Yeah, exactly. But, don't worry about anything. We'll take care of it.
But, you know, we have a very sexually violent culture. We have a racially divided culture. The stuff that you're going to see live streaming, you know, as fast as they, you know, try to grab it, pull it down and block it and everything, it's going to be horrible. I mean, you need to really prepare yourself, your mind and your spirit for the stuff that we're going to be witnessing. And technology is such an amazing thing. You know, look at, here we are in the studio talking to so many people, but there's no technology that's ever existed that did not get abused. And this has such potential for it. It's going to be very despairing for a lot of people to watch what's happening to their country. So, you know, now more than ever, we need to stick close to the Lord. And of course that goes for even the Trump worshipers. You know, placing your hope in any one single man to save all of our problems is a huge mistake.
Huge mistake. I do want to add one more thing to that. You know, you have a very vulnerable individual literally being tortured live on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It took Facebook over 30 minutes before they finally removed it, and they're refusing to explain why. They literally allowed it to be broadcast.
It's not something.
You got to wonder why. Did they do it as a business decision because it's going to draw a lot of people and a lot of attention to Facebook? It's kind of, you know, it raises a lot of questions. It does.
Well, so much leeway is given to, you know, the other side of our racial divide. And we've got now a CNN correspondent host saying that he doesn't think what they did was evil. He thought it was just a matter of bad upbringing. And so as long as we have a country that's in denial and a White House saying that we don't know, it's too early to tell if this was a hate crime. I don't know how we can ever fix our problems on a national level if we're going to deny the heinousness of the things that we're willing to do as a country, as a culture.
Well, that brings up, this denial. That brings up a good question, and is a good segue. You know, we had ISIS publish a list of churches in America to attack.
Yeah.
Almost nothing out of the administration. It came out on social media. but almost nothing out of the administration. And Christian, I mean, this is literally targeting Christian churches. Now, they have everything that they've said they were going to do, knife attacks, using trucks, right? That has happened already.
They're doing it.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have this now. They're going to attack Christian churches. What is your message to pastors listening today and churchgoers listening today about how they can be self-reliant, freedom-loving Americans in church if something like this just happened?
Well,
to be prepared.
Very clearly, straight up, you need to consider the security of your congregation. If you are a shepherd, you have a duty to protect your flock. Now, the weapons of warfare are not carnal. They're, you know, we're in spiritual war, but that does manifest itself physically. And you don't have an obligation just to protect your flock from spiritual matters, which we're struggling in that area as well. But that's not limited to only spiritual issues. You have a duty to make sure that your flock is protected. And people all around the world are being gunned down. There are people that have lookouts in the underground church around the world, living in Muslim countries where they face threats on a daily basis. Just when two or three people gather together to talk about Jesus or share scripture, they have lookouts, they have armed guards, they use covert communications measures. This is a reality for people around the world that we've never had to consider. And so I think I'm really encouraged, actually, because I have a lot of listeners, pastors in the listening audience, and I hear back from them, and it's really encouraging to hear more and more of them taking this seriously, developing security teams within their churches, keeping it low profile. And but these guys, volunteers, parishioners with former law enforcement, military, various different backgrounds and training, to be able to, you know, they're the sheepdogs among the flock, and they're prepared to stand in the gap and protect their fellow church members. And the pastors are actually, they're getting, this is becoming real to them. So it's good to see.
It is good to see. You know, reality around the world is that there is violence toward Christians on a daily basis. It's just happening around the world. I remember the case in Syria where there was a church. It was kind of, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, so to speak. ISIS was going to attack it. The church literally formed its own militia, armed itself, and fought off the attackers.
Absolutely.
Now, there are American pastors today who cannot fathom a reality like that. And so they always say, well, guns are a bad thing. They're just a bad thing. We can't have them anywhere near the church.
Right.
When, in fact, the rest of the Christian church is living with that daily reality.
If I had a pastor that was talking like that, I would find another church because they're obviously not in touch with reality. Am I willing to die for my faith? Yes. If somebody puts an AK-47 to my head and asks if I'm a Christian, I'm coming home.
Right.
But I mean, so for me, it's a win-win situation. But also, we're supposed to, you know, defend the oppressed and liberate, free the oppressed. We're supposed to defend the defenseless. And if somebody comes in while I'm in church service and yells Allahu Akbar and pulls out a gun, they're going down. You know, so I will always choose to defend life, but if I die for my faith, you know, that's fine too, but I'm not going to throw myself on a sword just for the sake of, oh, this is what it's like to be a Christian. This is just what you're supposed to do. And go like a lamb to the slaughter.
It's interesting to me that those types of statements from certain pastors, I think deny the history of the entire Judeo-Christian, you know,
well,
worldview.
They deny the history of our own country. And in fact, it's kind of sad to see some of the modern pastors. I've seen a couple speak out against the founding fathers, saying the founding fathers were wrong. They were rebelling against authority, against government. They were wrong, but they sure love, you know, reaping the benefits of liberty and freedom and living in, you know, the prosperity of this country. that they wouldn't have had if those out of line Christians hadn't formed militias and won our country.
Yeah, ignoring 1 Peter 2 and 3.
Right.
Totally, because you have literally the laying down in those two chapters what God expects of government, and very simply put, to punish evildoers and promote and protect the righteous.
Absolutely. To uphold the righteous and do justice to the evildoers.
Very simple. So if government's not doing that, then it's not operating under the God-ordained authority.
When you have a government then that is punishing the righteous and they are upholding the evildoers, you have an inversion.
Yeah.
That is obviously godless. It goes completely against God's design for a government.
Yeah, and God is not going to sanction evil, right? He's not going to allow evil like that. He's not going to say, and this is key for people to understand. God is not going to say, he allows evil to happen in the world. He does. Because there has to be a choice for there to be true love, right? There has to be. But he is not going to sanction it as his form of government or say that that's okay or, you know, any, and I think people get that confused. It's not okay.
Well, you know, also in judges are supposed to rule out of the fear of the Lord. Now we've got this administration assigning judges, appointing judges that not only not fear the Lord, they are hostile against God's law and everything that he said, this is the standard for what a government should be, for kings. I've got a whole list of this at home compiled for a book that I'm working on to address, you know, a lot of these issues. So, when you've got a government that is acting completely contradictory to God's law and basically promoting sin and evil and attacking the righteous, you've got a serious problem.
So let's end with this, and then we can talk about the 51st state for a few minutes.
Yes.
So fake news. No surprise that comes out that the Poynter Institute, the supposed third-party trusted fact checker, is funded by none other than George Soros and Bill Gates.
Imagine that.
Wow.
So what, isn't Snopes tied with Soros funding too?
And, yeah.
There's a couple. There's Truth or Fiction. We're finding out all of these websites are being funded by the left and globalists.
So when you hear the term fake news out there, like we started with, think about mainstream media, some of the things that are coming out now. And I'll talk about one real quick thing that just happened to me. So Crosscut did an article busting the myth of the 51st state. Okay.
Oh,
we're going to bust the myth of the 51st state. No facts in there whatsoever. Okay. Said that the differences in worldview, et cetera, were born out of ignorance. Okay. Then it later on says, you know, the people think that those that live in Eastern Washington are a bunch of hicks. Right. And so I challenged the author on Twitter, because they tagged me on Twitter. So I challenged the author on Twitter. Good. I said, you can continue to call us ignorant. You can continue to call us hicks. Why not just let us leave? And instead of answering the question, she says, I didn't say that. So I put the quotes in from the article.
Right.
I said, thanks for proving my point. Well, half a quote doesn't prove your point. Well, you still put it in there.
Yeah.
It's still an accurate quote, even if it's half of it.
Right.
So this whole thing with the 51st state, the left really doesn't want to let us go.
Right.
Even though they make fun of it.
That's why I said, don't believe it for a minute when they say, why don't you guys just go, you hicks? When you reject their system, they can't stand it. They want control. They want to control you to make you embrace their system. Well, they're at the same time telling you, don't force your views on us. They're forcing their views on you. Hypocrisy.
Total.
And that's why people want to break free from that.
So 73%, according to KXOY's, which was supposed to be a shaming poll, but it didn't work.
It backfired.
They had to take it down.
That's great.
You know, 8,000 plus people, 73% support splitting the other side of the state. And Let's walk through a couple of issues. Some people say this is not constitutional. We came back really quickly, immediately rebutted that. Article 4, Section 3 very clearly lays out states. Absolutely. Then people came back and they said, this isn't Christian. How do you respond to something like that?
to throw off the chains of tyranny, I can't think of anything more Christian and in line with our American heritage than that.
I just found it interesting that Israel and Judah had a similar moment where
absolutely
part of a country wanted to continue in unrighteousness, part of a country wanted to stay righteous and with the Lord.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. We can split and become two different countries without one of us going into captivity yet. Right? Like Israel and Judah.
Right.
Israel was taken away into captivity. But yeah, there was a division. You guys want to honor the Lord? Or you guys don't want to, we do want to. So let's just draw a line in the sand and you guys do it your way. We'll do it our way.
But John Jacob, you are promoting the Balkanization of the United States of America. How do you respond to that?
I say, absolutely. Is that a vice? Let's see. I'm not contributing to the division that's already happening in our country. I want restoration. But if the rest of the country or different parts of the country, like California, have no desire to return to American traditional heritage and they reject it, why should I follow them? They're the ones that are the dividers. They're the ones that are balkanizing our country.
I agree. They're the ones that are ignoring the Constitution, creating this crisis.
But see, we're using logic. So they're at a, you know, obviously we're at a disadvantage because we're trying to reason with them on using logic.
Okay, so let's talk emotion for a second then. This just can't happen. This just can't happen. There's no way possible this can happen.
This is unprecedented.
Why would you want to waste your time with this?
Freedom.
Well, my sense is, look, why not? We're not going to be any worse off, and we actually have cast a vision for a new state that would probably be rivaling Texas in prosperity.
The area in along the Puget Sound area, where it was the farthest to the left, who are controlling the policies of the rest of the state, their views are no longer in line with the majority of the people in the rest of the state. In fact, they are in conflict with them. They are proposing views and policies and ideals to force those who disagree with them to comply, to force their views on others, the hypocritical "don't force your views on us," which is precisely what they're doing to those on the left, to force people to do things that violate their own conscience. And that's really what it comes down to. When you force someone to violate his own conscience and you can enforce that, that's tyranny. And the people want to break free from tyranny. It is a natural human desire to break free from tyranny and bondage.
Well, it was just, you know, election night was so stark. 49-48, Trump's winning.
Yeah.
Then King County vote comes in, right? 10-point swing. Boom.
Exactly.
Right. And everybody says, how is that possible? You know, and yes, 40,000 new people have moved to King County. Some people say 50 have moved to King County last 3 years. But by the same token, what about our voice? You know, they're always talking about democracy. We don't live in a democracy. They're always talking about democracy, right?
Yes.
Your voice needs to be heard. Our voice isn't being heard. And when we do bring out the 51st state, we get mocked for it. And then when we call them for mocking us, they say, well, it's just not possible. You don't need to go.
Right.
Why not just let us go?
Because they don't want to relinquish control. It's about control.
Why not? Why not with all of this? Why not just allow them to have their own socialist utopia? And I'll tell you what I think. I think that they know they would collapse without us.
You're probably right. Well, I don't know. I think some of them might. They are so arrogant, though. When you are interacting with people that think like that on the far left, socialist, communist type of mindset, they actually believe that their system, every communist is convinced that he can do it right, even though it's always failed. But there's a reason why they didn't fail, why they failed, because they didn't spend enough money, or they didn't do something. They didn't do it right, but I'm going to make communism right this time. All the other examples failed because they didn't do it my way. And so that's the mindset.
It is a mindset. Well, in the last minute or so that we have, we've been talking with people about creating a flag for the 51st states.
Yes.
For the state of liberty. What do you think about that? How do you think it's coming?
Well, I've seen some of the concepts, and I'm really intrigued to see more and to learn more about that. I think it really should be symbolic of the values that the majority of the people hold in the eastern part of Washington, or shall I say the state of liberty. We'll just start calling it the state of liberty. It's not eastern Washington anymore. And that clean break needs to really happen. So I'm excited. I know that there's a lot of different concepts, and we want to get some more input on that and hopefully be able to talk about that in the future.
I look forward to it. John, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Pleasure.
Plug your broadcast real quick.
John Jacob Schmidt at RadioFreeRedoubt.com. We have a Sunday evening podcast at 8 p.m. every week. And Saturday mornings, we're on KTW out of Spokane. Join us there. And we're live streaming as well.
Right on. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Remember to do everything you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.